Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'll be reading this week's Big Bend Sentinel. These articles were published Wednesday, May 5th, 2021. City. Marfa re-elects mayor and council members, adds newcomer to school board. Marfa elections on Saturday, May 1st, saw modest turnouts, where unofficial vote tallies indicate three incumbents were re-elected into city positions, while an incumbent and a newcomer were elected to the Marfa school board. Votes will be canvassed at upcoming meetings of the council and the board. Mayor Manuel Manny Baeza was re-elected to serve a second two-year term, running unopposed and receiving 221 votes. Down the ballot, council members Irma Salgado, 165 votes, and Raul Lara, 210 votes, were able to defend their seats against one challenger, Stephen Boelter, who received 78 votes. Lara, speaking about his priorities in the upcoming budget cycle, said he wanted to support public programs like the library and Meals on Wheels, but gave a guarantee to constituents that he would vote against a tax increase. Campaigning outside the Uncle's gas station on Saturday, Lara hoped he and Salgado would return to office for another term, touting the current balance of council, where longtime natives and newer art community voices were both represented. "It's a good balance of the community, and we respect each other," he said. He also spoke about how coronavirus delayed major city projects over the past year, saying with another term, they hope to get back on track. "I think streets are one of the biggest concerns," he said. Salgado said ahead of her re-election that her priorities for the upcoming budget cycle are to focus on city infrastructure, like streets and the water and sewer systems, she said. "It would be to our benefit to invest in our own equipment to work on the streets and train the public works staff to operate the equipment themselves, rather than continually paying higher prices to outside contracting firms." Around 250 Marfa residents turned out to vote in the general election for Marfa City Council, lagging behind the more than 700 locals who voted in the city's November 2020 election. After being delayed from its usual May 2020 election day due to coronavirus concerns, that race saw a bump in turnout because it coincided with the presidential race. At the Marfa Independent School District School Board election, Yolanda Gerardo ran unopposed for her seat and earned 216 votes, endorsing her return to the board. In the contested race for another seat, Renee Gonzalez received 168 votes, defeating Jose Graeda, who tallied up 103 votes. Gonzalez, a father of one MISD graduate and two current students, said he would bring his knowledge from his work in the private security industry to better secure the school campus and keep students safe. Joining the board, as schools are still grappling with the unprecedented challenge of providing education and socialization during a pandemic, Gonzalez said, "This pandemic has caused a historic issue on schooling and communication with students and their families as well. I would be lying to you if I told you I had an answer. This is something we have never seen or dealt with before. But just like everything else, we will learn from it and keep adjusting until we get our groove back." City. City Council addresses roads and variances, among other topics. Marfa. Marfa City Council tackled a slate of topics on Thursday night, creating a new road supervisor job at the city, authorizing a host of public events, and paving the way for special use permits that make it easier for vehicle inspection facilities to open in the city of Marfa. Marfa's dated zoning code has been nearing a major overhaul since at least 2017, but without that large undertaking of revamping the code, some are still requesting changes or new variances within the current version. This week, council unanimously voted to add wineries to the list of permitted uses of properties zoned for C2 commercial use. The Planning and Zoning Committee had recommended the change since the current C2 allowances were cut and pasted from elsewhere and didn't allow for wineries, but permitted other alcohol-related businesses. Ricky Taylor, an owner of a new winery, Alta Marfa, began planting vines in Fort Davis in 2018, with plans to open a winery in Marfa that would manufacture, bottle, label, package, and distribute or sell wine from there. Taylor had found a landowner on Highway 90 near Celebration Liquor willing to build the facility and rent it to him, but then realized it wasn't permitted for that use. He worked with the Planning and Zoning Committee and City Council, and on Thursday, his plans for a winery moved one step closer to reality. Also on the docket was a chance for the city to authorize the Board of Adjustments to grant a special use permit for Department of Public Safety vehicle inspection stations and self-storage units in a residential district. Council member Buck Johnston expressed discomfort with putting businesses like those into residential areas. "I need to get my car safety inspected right now. I know how badly we need this in the area, but just doing it in a residential area, I'm a little uncomfortable with it," she said. When a variance is granted to a property owner, it remains in place until the property is sold. Council member Yosef Ben Yehuda suggested putting a one-year limit on this proposed variance, which would allow the BOA to reassess after a year, but that proposed limit didn't make it into the final motion. Previously, a DPS inspection station that operated in a residential area caused neighbors to complain. It was in violation of the zoning ordinance and was ultimately shuttered. With the loss of vehicle inspections in Marfa, residents have to travel farther just to get their annual inspection in order to register a vehicle. But it's also impacted other aspects of Marfa, Mayor Manny Baeza said. "We've lost a lot of businesses. We no longer have a parts store. We no longer have tire shops. We do have businesses coming to the town," he said. "But as far as for your basic needs in Marfa, everything brought into this town is pretty much for galleries and so forth. It's not really for services for the community." The mayor recommended splitting out the self-storage part of the resolution, saying those structures are potentially more permanent than a DPS inspection. Council member Raul Lara took up that recommendation, amending his motion so that only DPS inspection stations can be part of a special use permit by the BOA. The motion passed, with Council Member Johnston voting against it. Upcoming community events. Council unanimously voted to support the school holding a folklorico performance celebrating Mother's Day and Cinco de Mayo this Monday, May 10th at 6:30 p.m. at the County Courthouse lawn. Marfa Superintendent Oscar Aguero said they hope to celebrate the community being supportive of the school and show some of what's going on at the school. The city support will help Aguero petition TxDOT to close the street in front of the courthouse for 2 hours so the audience can fill the road that evening. The city also approved of a graduation parade that will take place Wednesday, May 26th at 6:30 p.m., which will process from the high school east on Lincoln Street, around the north side of the courthouse, and down Highland Avenue, honoring another year of high school seniors who have faced continued challenges from the pandemic. Finally, the council also voted to approve a free summer concert series in Blackwell Park, put on by the Blackwell School Alliance. The organization will host 3 Friday evening concerts from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., in the combined space of Blackwell School and Blackwell Park, with music and free food for guests. The family-friendly event is inviting locals to bring their folding chairs and blankets, Alliance President Gretel Inc. told council. "To just say, welcome back, Marfa, we're still here." The dates of each concert are still to be announced, but will take place on a Friday in June, July, and August of this year. City moves ahead on proposed land swap. Earlier this year, City Attorney Teresa Todd proposed a solution to a long unnoticed problem. Some years back, a row of city residents had summarily parked their homes into what was technically a roadway for Gonzales Street. Meanwhile, at the back of their lots, the city had put a gas line through those landowners' private property, rather than on land where the city had an easement. What I've been looking at is to try to offer something that's fair and incentivizes people to want to do this trade, Todd told the council on Thursday. One of the things is the encroachment onto the city street is harmless to us. It doesn't impede traffic. It's not causing problems. We didn't even know about it until this survey was done recently. To avoid piecemeal surveys, the city will use one surveyor to gather accurate data on the land. If left as is, the gas line on private land could cause liability and maintenance issues for the city. At Thursday's meeting, City Council authorized the attorney to move forward with a plan that would give city land to those homeowners in exchange for the right to take city ownership of the land where the gas lines were, a land swap. For one lot that is in the roadway but doesn't have a gas line in the back, the landowners have indicated interest in purchasing the land from the city instead. New road supervisor job created. Council narrowly voted to create a new job at the city, road supervisor, authorizing a hire with a beginning pay of $52,000 at Thursday's meeting. The job would essentially eliminate the public works director's job, instead creating a role that would oversee water and sewer and another that would oversee street maintenance and city parks. We're not making any movement on our roads. We're shorthanded, so we need to have a crew dedicated to road repair and a crew dedicated to sewer and water, Mayor Baeza said during the discussion. I think this is a great time to hopefully at least experiment for the next 6 months. It's something we can revisit during the budget project. Council members Lara and Salgado expressed concerns that the number of crew members currently on staff didn't warrant a split within the Public Works Department. Currently, the Public Works Department has multiple vacancies with only 5 employees on staff at this time. That includes Charles Chuck Salgado, who is currently overseeing the department in the interim after a departure by the former Public Works Director. City Manager Mandy Roan was unavailable this week to comment on the nature of the Public Works Director's departure, but at the city meeting on Thursday, Council and the city manager spoke candidly about discovering missing paperwork, including applications for those still vacant jobs. It's not something I'm excited about. It's not the way the city of Marfa operates, Roan said. But we are going to do better from here on out. City manager Roan believed once the city was able to fill vacancies in the department, there would be enough crew to warrant splitting public works employees between the role of handling water and sewer and the role of managing streets and parks. Roan said it wouldn't be done in the short term, but rather in the mid-range, and ultimately, all public works staff would be cross-trained for water, sewer, and roads. I think we have too many chiefs, and Chuck said he could handle the whole division, council member Salgado said about her vote against the creation of the new role. Nevertheless, on a 3-2 vote, Johnston, Ben Yehuda, and Councilmember Eddie Payares voted to create the new role, with Salgado and Lara dissenting. Government. With current ambulances in dire straits, Presidio EMS secures funding for new emergency vehicle. Presidio City Council pledged to purchase a new ambulance as the current ones on the street have seen better days. However, the new ambulance won't arrive until 2022 at the earliest. By Sachi McClendon, Presidio. Last Wednesday, the Presidio City Council unanimously passed a motion to fund the purchase of a new ambulance. The decision comes as the city's 2 emergency vehicles are nearing or are well past their expiration dates. Residents of Presidio and the surrounding area shouldn't breathe a sigh of relief yet, however. The earliest the city would see a new ambulance is January 2022. The current estimate for a new ambulance is $181,000, according to a quote the city received from the ambulance manufacturer Fraser. The price tag could go up to $225,000, depending on supply chain issues, fluctuations in the cost of materials, and potential equipment upgrades. Presidio residents will not be footing the majority of the cost, however. EMS Director Malyanda Richardson secured $76,000 from the Extraordinary Emergency Fund run by the Texas Department of State Health Services. Then, after the council had already committed to purchasing a new vehicle, the Big Bend Regional Hospital District pledged another $74,000 in the form of a reimbursable grant during a meeting on Thursday. The city promised to cover the rest, which could range between $31,000 to $75,000. "I'm trying to keep that cost down because the city has very limited funds," Richardson said. The two ambulances currently on the streets have seen better days. The ambulance purchased most recently, in 2017, a Ford F-350, colloquially known as 565, has over 142,000 miles on it. The older ambulance, a 2012 Dodge Ram, also known as 564, has driven over 182,000 miles. You ask almost any EMS provider, if your ambulance hits 100,000 miles, you get another one, Richardson said at a city council meeting in April. Considering that the closest hospital is 86 miles away in Alpine, the Presidio ambulances tack on an incredible amount of miles during each round trip. In March alone, the ambulances clocked a combined 4,332 miles for 34 EMS responses, according to the most recent EMS report. That's an average of 127 miles per response. "If we're coming from Candelaria, we go 55 miles out, 55 miles in, 86 miles north, 86 miles back. So it comes up to about 280 miles round trip," Richardson said. "The mileage adds up out there." You'd be hard-pressed to find an ambulance in West Texas with more miles on it than these, said Troy Sparks, a Presidio EMT who also works for Pecos County EMS Services. "The issues don't stop with the miles, particularly for Ambulance 564. The latch on one of the side doors is broken. The built-in fridge for storing medicine at times doesn't work. Worst of all, the steering is out of alignment, making the ambulance veer while on the road. If you know how to ice skate, then you know what it's like to drive this," Sparks said. Right now, 564 is in Odessa getting repairs. Richardson said she only wants to put 564 on the road if it's necessary, like when there's a second emergency call. "I don't want to think, oh, is this ambulance going to make it to Alpine?" In July 2019, the newer ambulance, 565, didn't make it all the way to Alpine. It actually broke down on the side of the road, once with a patient, while going up Childress Hill, Richardson said. An ambulance from Marfa had to come pick up the patient and transport them to the hospital. That summer, there had been a month-long stretch where both ambulances had broken down and had been sent to the shop for repairs. Richardson was able to lease a temporary ambulance from El Paso, yet it wouldn't arrive for 3 or 4 days. In the meantime, patients were picked up by a Border Patrol van typically used for transporting undocumented immigrants. The van is essentially a pickup truck with a camper shell and a bench seat and a stretcher mount in the back. "It's not a fun ride," she said. "Of course, that was the weekend we just got slammed. I don't want to be in that position again." Richardson has been on the hunt for new hospital wagons for over a year, but finding the funds to purchase a new vehicle has been an uphill battle. Richardson had initially planned to purchase two new ambulances back in September 2020 after she applied for a grant with the Texas Department of Agriculture. She even got the Big Bend Hospital District to put up $74,000. However, the deal fell through after the city was unable to produce its 2018 and 2019 audits. Even if Richardson orders the new ambulance tomorrow, it won't be ready for another 8 to 10 months. You really need to kind of plan ahead, and unfortunately, that just doesn't work out, Richardson said. Yet the demands for Presidio's ambulances are increasing, Richardson said. Transports are on the rise, partly due to COVID, but also due to the city's aging population. We have a high prevalence of diabetes and hypertension. You have people that, because of COVID, may not have been as diligent about going to see their doctor. They might not have been able to get their prescriptions refilled as easily, she said. What's happening is that they have a controllable, chronic, ongoing medical condition that all of a sudden becomes an acute condition that's an emergency, and they call 911. Richardson has already begun the fight anew to get another ambulance. She has said that she's been working on updating the city's financial books so that the city will be able to apply for future grants. Alpine man arrested in connection to Capitol riots, released on $10,000 bond, by Saatchi McClendon. An Alpine resident turned himself in to authorities last Wednesday after an arrest warrant was issued for his alleged participation in the January 6th Capitol insurrection. Sean David Watson is charged with violent entry and disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds, in addition to knowingly entering and remaining in a restricted building without lawful authority, according to the arrest warrant. After appearing in front of a judge in Alpine on Friday, Watson was released on a $10,000 unsecured bond, according to Shane O'Neill, who was appointed to represent Watson in his initial appearance. "I did what I did, and you can't undo what's happened," Watson said last Friday after being released from jail. "This is all political," he said. "This is retribution. This is revenge. That's all it is." Watson is one of over 400 people who have been arrested in connection to the riots. On January 6th, the joint session of Congress was set to certify the results of the 2020 election when a crowd, numbering in the hundreds, broke through police lines and entered the halls of the U.S. Capitol. Police scrambled to evacuate the building and the National Guard was deployed. Watson first appeared on the FBI's radar just a week after the event. According to the affidavit, one of Watson's co-workers notified the FBI that Watson was showing off videos he took during the riots to other employees. Soon after, FBI agents interviewed Watson, who admitted to attending political rallies in D.C., but denied storming the Capitol. As the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported, Watson was a lab technician at the Big Bend Regional Medical Center. A spokesperson for the hospital said that Watson is no longer an employee, but wouldn't say whether his termination was related to the recent charges. In February, the FBI raided Watson's home, seizing his cell phone and interviewing him again. This time, Watson admitted to participating in the insurrection on Capitol Hill. The FBI also found text and videos on Watson's phone that further tied him to the event. According to the affidavit, he allegedly texted someone, "I am fine. I was one of the people that helped storm the Capitol building and smash out the windows. We made history today. Proudest day of my life." Watson had been arrested the evening before on January 5th by D.C. Metro Police for crossing a police line, according to an arrest report obtained by the Big Bend Sentinel. At the time of the arrest, he was just a block away from the Capitol grounds. Following the FBI raid, Watson spoke to CBS 7 and publicly openly acknowledged his role in the riots. "We just walked around," Watson told CBS 7. "We were chanting. Some of us were singing the national anthem." The affidavit released several photos found on Watson's phone that showed the mob closing in on the Capitol, as well as one taken from inside the building. There's also a photo of Watson in front of a statue gripping a flag. The FBI officer investigating the case claimed that Watson tried to delete images of the riot from his phone. Watson denied last Friday, saying that, "I have never tried to delete anything. You can't undo the past." I don't try to cover my tracks, he said. If I was trying to cover my tracks, I mean, look at my house. It speaks for itself. The front of Watson's home is covered in political banners, one that reads, "Don't blame me, I voted for Trump," while another insinuates that President Joe Biden is suffering from dementia. Yesterday, Watson appeared via teleconference before a magistrate judge with the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, where his case is being handled. West Texas Criminal Defense Lawyers Team Up by Saatchi McClendon, Alpine. Veteran West Texas criminal defense lawyer Liz Rogers announced last week that she has teamed up with attorneys Shane O'Neill and Dick DeGuerin to collaborate on cases together to represent the West Texas citizen accused. O'Neill, a graduate of Harvard Law School, worked for the Federal Public Defender Office in Alpine for 4 years. There, he tried to make pretrial release the norm in the district court for undocumented immigrants accused of illegally re-entering the United States. After some initial success with one defendant, O'Neill said he faced some pushback from the court. Unfortunately, since then, the government has been appealing my attempts to get people illegally present out on a bond to the district court judge who has not been as persuaded by my arguments, O'Neill said. O'Neill is now entering the world of private practice and is sharing an office with Rogers. He said he left the federal defender's office so that he could have the ability to represent defendants in both federal and state court. The criminal practice in state court is, I think, significantly different than in federal court, O'Neill said. State court is kind of referred to as the Wild West. O'Neill said he also wanted the flexibility to get involved in cases that are more complex or that are more likely to go to trial. He's a very capable young lawyer that has done very well in his short term, Rogers said of O'Neill. Dick DeGuerin hardly needs an introduction. He has taken on a number of high-profile cases, representing the illustrious likes of Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison, Congressional Majority Leader Tom DeLay, Alan Stanford, David Koresh, and Robert Durst. DeGuerin successfully defended Durst on a self-defense theory after Durst dismembered his neighbor's body and threw it into Galveston Bay. "I have kind of made a specialty of murder cases," DeGuerin said. While DeGuerin's main office is in Houston, he maintains a satellite office in Marfa and has worked with Rogers in the past on a number of cases out here. "This is really kind of formalizing a relationship I've had with Liz. I've admired her for many years," DeGuerin said. "For Shane and me, it's just a great honor for Dick to join us. That's one of the most wonderful things that he wants to be affiliated with us," Rogers said. Rogers worked with the Federal Public Defender Office for almost 30 years before starting her private practice in 2015. She has consistently been on the front lines of West Texas criminal defense, securing multiple not guilty verdicts for clients who acted under duress of cartels and convincing the courts to throw out smuggling charges against a client who had charitably tried to take distressed, injured people to the hospital. While all three maintain their separate private practices, they said they are thrilled to have the opportunity to work together. Border Patrol search Presidio home, apprehend 37 undocumented immigrants. From staff reports, Presidio. Border Patrol agents found 37 undocumented immigrants, three of whom were children, in a Presidio house last Thursday. As agents with Border Patrol and Homeland Security investigations arrived on scene, two individuals tried to run out of the home but were detained by agents. Multiple individuals were rescued from harsh conditions of overcrowding, said Big Bend Sector Chief Patrol Agent Sean McGoffin. According to Greg Davis, a spokesperson for Border Patrol, this is the 12th stash house bust this fiscal year for agents in the Big Bend sector. "This is an ongoing process," Davis said of the apprehensions. "When you take one small part down, you're impacting the larger process. You can slow them down for a bit. They may shift their resources or planning. It's an interruption in their operations. Davis said the house will most likely be seized if it's found to be involved in criminal activity. We'll take that away from the profit margins of the cartels, he said. Davis did not know if the immigrants detained would be referred for prosecution. Car chase ends at edge of town. Driver gets away, from staff reports. Marfa. A car chase that began on Monday evening at the Border Patrol checkpoint south of town on Highway 67 ended at El Cosmico Hotel after a Presidio County Sheriff's deputy deployed a spike strip to pop the tires of the fleeing vehicle. The driver of the Nissan Rogue jumped out and ran onto a property near the hotel, according to Police Chief Steve Marquez. There were four other occupants in the car, one of whom was a four-year-old child. The occupants were detained and turned over to Border Patrol, according to Presidio County Sheriff Danny Dominguez. Greg Davis, a spokesperson for Border Patrol, did not know if the occupants were referred for prosecution. The Presidio County Sheriff's Office, the Marfa Police Department, and Border Patrol all participated in the chase. At this time, the driver has not been found.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, May 6, 2021. Mayor, City Councilman Reelected by Nathan Heuer. The voter turnout rose by over 15% from the 2019 election, but the results proved to be identical for the May 1st election, as Fort Stockton Mayor Chris Alexander and City Councilman Paul Casillas and Ruben Falcon will all retain their seats after a highly contested race that came to a conclusion on Saturday. Falcon edged Ruben James Bernal in the closest race of the election to retain his seat and to serve his third term as City Councilman. Falcon tallied 490 votes, while Bernal ended the election with 446 votes. Casillas had the most votes for the city councilman with 506. The Fort Stockton native, who also serves on the recreation board and works for the Fort Stockton Independent School District, will serve his second term after getting elected for the first time in 2019. Mike Stallard finished the election with 210 votes. Alexander had a 135-vote lead heading into Election Day over Marianne Terrazas White for mayor, with the tally at 308 to 173. That gap was narrowed as White had three more Election Day votes and 10 more absentee ballot votes. But Alexander maintained his seat once again with an official vote advantage of 529 to 407. The Fort Stockton native will serve his fourth term over the next 2 years. The 122 advantage is nearly identical to the 120 vote advantage Alexander defeated White by in 2019. It was a good turnout. I'm excited to be reelected, he said. The mayor added that his current focus is on a handful of important projects that are ongoing or will soon be moving forward, which include the Springhurst Hotel, the new landfill, the Fort Stockton Plaza renovation, and the new recreation center. Voter turnout was up by 137 votes from the 2019 election, as there were 942 ballots cast this election compared to 805 in 2019. The amount of votes is the greatest quantity tallied in at least the past 7 years for a May election. This election follows suit with the rise in voter turnout locally and nationally, as the city of Fort Stockton saw record turnouts for voting this past November. There were over 1,800 people who voted for city council members on the November ballot. The city council election was moved from May to November due to the COVID-19 pandemic. In that election, Pam Palileo and James Warnock were reelected, while Darren Hodges was also selected to serve on the council. Illegal immigrant discovered in city dumpster by Nathan Heuer. A report of a kid playing in a city dumpster on May 3rd led to the finding of an illegal immigrant shortly after by Fort Stockton Code Enforcement Officer Jeremy Gonzalez. Gonzalez was dispatched to go check on the safety of a kid and to potentially relay the news to their parents Monday morning. But when he arrived to the scene between North Orient Street and Alamo Street, the code enforcement officer found what appeared to be a male in his 20s. The sanitation truck driver said he lifted the container and somebody jumped out. He thought it was a kid playing in the dumpster. In my mind, I'm looking for a kid so I can tell the parents, hey, your child was in the dumpster, and he was almost taken away. Gonzalez saw a large shadow by the dumpster and immediately called the Fort Stockton Police Department when approaching the man while also remaining calm to ensure the individual did not run away. I see a shadowy figure by the dumpster and I'm thinking that looked a little bigger than a child. When I get to the dumpster, it's a man, like a 20-year-old. I don't know his age, but he was not a child. So I asked him if he was standing inside the dumpster and he said yes, he was asleep in it. Gonzalez began to ask the individual questions in Spanish, and the male said he had no home, was not from the area, and had somebody that was picking him up from Odessa. He was acting real suspicious. I'm asking him questions. I asked him if he lives here and if he has a home. He didn't have a home. These red flags are going off in my head. He's an immigrant, and he's on the run. Border Patrol arrived to the scene soon after and detained the male, who they had been on the lookout for multiple days, according to what Gonzalez was told. I called PD, and they notified Border Patrol because it fit the description of somebody that they had seen on surveillance. They were really trying to catch this guy. Border Patrol in Fort Stockton was not able to confirm the information, and public information officials did not respond by press time. The police department Chief Robert Lujan also could not confirm information regarding the case. He stated that any case involving illegal immigrants immediately gets turned over and dealt with by the Border Patrol. Despite the lack of confirmation, Lujan did say that he was aware of the situation that took place on Monday. Gonzalez stated he received confirmation that the individual was an illegal immigrant from the Border Patrol. City moves forward with RFQ. By Nathan Heuer. The City of Fort Stockton City Council took an important initial step towards building a new rec center in Fort Stockton on April 27th at the group's regular meeting. Re-elected Councilman Paul Casillas presented a brief summary of what the project would include and the need in the Fort Stockton community for a new athletic facility. The briefing ended with the City Council approving to move forward with a request for qualifications. The motion was unanimously accepted with a deadline of June 4th for companies to submit their qualifications. I asked for this item to be placed on the agenda for Council to consider going for RFQs. I strongly feel that our city is in need of a new recreation department facility. The councilman added that the new facility would allow the city to host volleyball, basketball, and even indoor soccer tournaments, which in turn would benefit the local economy. This could bring in a lot of parents, a lot of travelers. They can stay here in Fort Stockton 3 to 4 days. Little League tournaments can run for 7 days, so we can keep people here. While time frame for the project is far from decided, the City Council will have a build firm selection at their regular meeting on June 22nd. The current proposed location of the facility is adjacent to the Fort Stockton Events Center. The facility will be 15,000 square feet, according to the City Council packet, and include, but not limited to, indoor multi-sports, basketball, volleyball courts, office space, bathrooms, meeting space, and storage. Casillas stated that the hope is to get a facility built to meet the basic needs of getting sports events going and adding to the building as time goes on. The councilman added that for the initial project, the current hopes are that the costs will possibly come in under $1 million, but that is yet to be determined. This is a developing story and will be reported about by the Pioneer as the project moves forward. A Look at People Traveling Through Fort Stockton by Jeremy Gonzalez. A large wooden cross was carried down Dickinson Boulevard Monday morning, and its bearer, Walter Masters, was open to discuss his symbolic mission. "I've been called to carry this cross to all ends of America," he said. "I've walked through Fort Stockton before, and I'm enjoying walking through it again, just sharing the love of Christ with the people I come in contact with." The ministry is a combination of walking and driving, with his wife Tammy behind the wheel of their RV. Starting near K-Bob's Steakhouse, he made his way toward his wife, who was parked on the opposite side of town. By noon, Masters had already passed the giant roadrunner with his cross. Weighing around 35 pounds, the traveling cross is equipped with a single wheel mounted at its base and the phrase, "Jesus loves you," engraved on the side. "I've been out for 20 years carrying a cross this way," he explained. "I've gotten used to how heavy it is. When you do treks out on the highway, like from here to El Paso, the miles seem to go very slowly. I just finished a trip from Brownsville to the Canadian border. Now I'm working east to west from San Angelo outward. Last time I walked through Fort Stockton, I went all the way to Deming, New Mexico on I-10. The San Angelo native shed light on his admiration for West Texas, saying it's his favorite portion of his on-foot evangelism. "We honestly just love West Texas," he said, with the cross resting on his shoulder. "God just gave us an attachment to this area. There's a Bible verse that says, 'Take up your cross daily,' and I've obviously taken that literally. Fortunately, I get to do it in great places like this town. We go from town to town all over the United States, and nothing feels quite like El Paso, Brownsville, or even Fort Stockton." Departing with his cross, he concluded, "No matter where you are in Texas, you're home." Alumni Happy Hour to return for WRTTC by Nathan Hewart. The Midland College WRTTC in Fort Stockton began its alumni association less than 5 years ago, and since then the organization has been a driving force behind raising money for their Scholars Dollars Scholarship Fund. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the organization's fundraising efforts were nearly halted by the inability to host events and large gatherings. The program that Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster started many years ago has evolved a great deal and is now able to help more students than ever before. It's basically anybody who walks in the door at Midland College can qualify for that scholarship. It helps to fund college for anybody. Ethany Valenzuela, Alumni Association president, said, "I'd say 90% of the group we had last year or the year before prospered from scholars' dollars." Valenzuela, who is an instructor at the college in the health science department, directly benefited from the scholars' dollars fund herself. Now that she is an instructor, she is focused on giving back to her college by raising funds for program as the Alumni Association's president. "I went to nursing school and graduated as an RN, and I didn't owe because of dollars for scholars," she said. Coming up on May 13th is the Alumni Association's third annual Alumni Happy Hour, which will be held at the Gray Mule. The Alumni Happy Hour has been a good time to really show the contribution that Midland College as a college has done for this community, the contribution in professionals. FSISD teacher Irene Ramirez will be a guest speaker along with an instructor at the college that has yet to be announced. DJ Flex will donate his time to provide music at the event, along with many other donors who donate items such as food, drinks, and other items that will be raffled off. The event comes at a time when Valenzuela and the newly formed Alumni Association Board are focused on growing the group and maximizing the extent the college has in the community of Fort Stockton. "Our mission right now is, one, connect alumni for networking purposes, and two, create an avenue for that alumni to kind of participate in the community. Therefore, that's more networking. So we've got our alumni networking, but also we're trying in businesses to help donate. So now we're meeting people in the community. To stay up to date with the WRTTC Midland College Alumni Association, follow their newly created Facebook page."
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, April 29th. MEDC officially awarded $1.5 million to fund broadband project. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Monahans Economic Development Corporation officially received word last Friday that they were awarded a $1.5 million grant from the Economic Development Administration. In November 2020, MEDC board members learned they had secured the federal grant for the 13-mile fiber loop internet conduit to serve the commercial and industrial businesses in the city of Monahans. Carol Faulkner with Faulkner Consulting LLC had originally submitted the grant to the U.S. Economic Development Administration Austin Office Investment Review Committee in September of 2020 for a total of $3 million. Quote, MEDC was approved for $1.5 million and with local contributions in the amount of $600,000. They will have around $2.1 million to work with to help move the broadband project along, Faulkner said. The total project cost was expected to be about $3 million, and the grant required 20% to come from local funds. Quote, the plan is to eventually extend the fiber out for residential customers, which is critical now considering the current pandemic and how many people are working and doing school from home, Faulkner added. The project is dedicated to providing fiber-based communications network to replace the existing infrastructure in Monahans. Monahans Chamber of Commerce Director Teresa Burnett was essential in helping to secure additional contributions from the Permian Basin Foundation, the King Foundation, Ward County, as well as other contributors. MEDC Board of Directors tasked ENCOM for the engineering work of the project and HAF Associates with the providing data collection and extraction services using mobile light detection and ranging technology, or LIDAR. MEDC is also working with Faulkner Consulting and ENCOM on the planning and design of the Metro Ethernet route. ENCOM will prepare maps of the routes based on information gathered from the community to ensure that the proposed route is feasible. The Metro Ethernet topology is the local backbone of the broadband network. Work is scheduled to begin in the summer with connections in the fall. Council members request more details on nuisance properties. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. City Council Member District 3, Calvin Correll, expressed his discontent with the format of the Code Compliance Monthly Summary submitted by Code Enforcement Officer Richard Covington during Tuesday's council meeting. Quote, I don't feel like the council is being kept up to date on what is happening on these properties that are not in compliance. The report does not tell us anything. There is no address where the notices were left, and no timeline is given. Therefore, this report is useless, Councilmember Correll said. The Code Compliance Monthly Summary is submitted stating how many violations were given for the month and what they were issued for, such as grass and weeds, junk vehicles, and dangerous structures. There is also a count of how many violations were cleared and how many are still pending for the month. Properties which are not brought into compliance within the time frame given or who do not respond are presented to the City Council, then sent to Municipal Judge Lori Asbury, who then is tasked with trying to get the owner to comply. Quote, if you would like a more extensive report, that would be no problem. I have been only doing what was asked of the previous administration. My only issue is listing address of every notice given out and having them printed in the newspaper and me ending up the most disliked person in the town. I just do not want to cause more harm than good, Covington said. Councilmember Richard Hawkins suggested listing only the legal address to keep the names of the citizens out of the newspaper, but added, quote, "It would be a good idea to have some way to match the notices given out with properties listed on the report," end quote. Thee said, quote, "We have already begun coming up with a new format of reporting, which is more detailed, and it will be a work in progress until we find one that works for everyone. We are looking at a computer program which will make this kind of reporting easier. This is one of the big complaints that the citizens have is nuisance properties. We would all like to clean up our community, but we do need more information on this and need to know what is going on," Mayor David Cutbirth said. One of the properties the city took note of during the March Council meeting, 315 East A Street, is set to be demolished by the city, Covington said. Quote, "The city inspector deemed it unsafe for repair and recommended it be torn down," end quote. The ownership of the property will stay with the owner, but the city will hold a lien against the property. Quote, "In this case, the property owner is deceased and the heirs have signed to have the property demolished. We wanted to make sure we followed the proper procedure and got everything correct so no issues arise later on," Covington said. Councilmember Correll asked, quote, "Is the process to condemn the property harder because it had been deemed unsafe?" End quote. Quote, "It used to be a little easier until the city of Dallas mistakenly tore down a historically preserved home. So the rules and regulations have been tightened up. In this case, the owner is okay with the demolition, but in other cases, they might not be. Therefore, we need to dot every I and cross every T so the city doesn't get sued," City Manager Rex Thee said. The council approved going forward with the procedure of the demolition of the property and allowing Thee and Covington to come up with a new code of compliance reporting form. Along with Thee and Correll, Mayor David Cutbirth, Councilmember Jeppy Wilson, Rudy Hernandez, Richard Hawkins, and City Attorney Alan Nicholas were all present for the meeting. Councilmember Ivy Valenzuela was absent. Monahan's Volunteer Fire Department battles two Tuesday fires. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. With the fire danger remaining high because of the dry conditions, members of the Monahan's Volunteer Fire Department were called to two more grass fires on Monday afternoon. The first, around 3:15 p.m., was about 11 miles north of Pyote near FM 2355 that destroyed about 5 acres of grassland, MVFD Chief Randy Crabtree said. Two brush trucks, a tanker along with assistance from Pyote were used to contain the blaze. There were no injuries. The second fire, at about 4 p.m., was north of Monahan's on Highway 18 and west on a remote area of the V-Bar Ranch. Three brush trucks and a county tanker were used to contain the 5-acre fire. The fire was contained without incident and there were no injuries. Quote, "The remote areas is rough on our equipment and we are in dire need of rain. Fire danger is really high right now," Crabtree said. Nicholas named first assistant DA. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Ward County Commissioners approved the oath of office for County Attorney Alan J. Nicholas as first assistant district attorney for the 143rd Judicial District Attorney in Monday morning's regular meeting. In addition to the new duties, Nicholas will remain in his role as county attorney and as attorney for the city of Monahans. Nicholas had previously served as first assistant DA and stepped down to accept the county and city attorney position. Camilla Cutbirth was then named to that position in April 2018. She will continue as assistant district attorney for border enforcement. Quote, "I look forward to prosecuting any criminal activity in Ward County," he said. In a separate action, the county commissioners reappointed four individuals to the Board of Managers for the Ward Memorial Hospital. Reappointed were Frank Heslin, Tommy Escamilla, Jeff Burdick, and Lisa Stewart. All four individuals are current board members. Members serve two-year terms, and half of the eight board members are appointed or reappointed every year at the end of their term. The appointment is from May 1, 2021, until April 30th of 2023. Quote, I had spoken with all four of these individuals, and they all said they were willing to serve for another 2 years, County Judge Greg Holly said.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.